What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
Would you say Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I bring you the rebels who are shaping our culture. I'm your host, Josh Levine. We are fresh off our second ever AMP Music Summit. If you listen to this show, I know you've heard me talk about it. We launched the AMP Summit back in May to focus on creative entrepreneurs, people inside and outside the music industry who are pivoting, innovating, experimenting, learning, challenging themselves to do something different in the face of COVID, in the face of racial justice or issues related to racial justice and inequality. So we had the second ever summit last week. We had 10 talks, and they are showing up on the ampmusicsummit.com website, along with the talks from our first summit. I think there's something close to 30 talks in total. If you want to hear some thought leaders, some people that are out there doing it, go get that. And let's get into this week's episode. This week I'm chatting over FaceTime with Felix Yane. I hope I said his name right. Felix is a German house DJ. You might know him from his 2014 remix for Cheerleader, which was a huge global success. He's got a new record out called Sicko, and he's doing great things. We have a great conversation. He talks a lot about some mental health challenges that he's been through. At the beginning of this year, he went to a Buddhist monastery and spent a bunch of time meditating, getting in some insight into himself and his process and all that. And he shares some of the tools and things he learned along the way. It's great lessons for all of us. It's about letting go of expectation, really learning to enjoy the process. Those are things that we all can benefit from. So I hope you'll dig it. Let's get into the interview right now. Thanks, man. It's great to meet you. I appreciate you making time.
Of course. Nice to meet you, too. Thanks for having me.
Well, cool, man. I really like everything you're doing. I know you got some big things coming up, and so I'm excited to talk about that. If you don't mind, though, I always like to start at the beginning. So do you remember the first record you ever bought?
The first record I ever bought? Probably Curtain Call, Eminem.
Okay.
Heard motherfuckers talk, seen them drop. If I ain't got a weapon, I'm gonna pick up a rock. And when I bust your ass, I'm gonna continue to rock. Get your ass off the wall with your two left feet. It's real easy, just follow the
beat. Yeah, I listened to a lot of Eminem and 50 Cent when I was like 10, 11, sure. 12, probably.
Yeah.
Those were like the first albums I bought. And then I got into dance music like later when I was like 15, 16 and started going out to parties and starting getting into DJing. That's when I heard like electronic music.
Yeah.
And discovered it really. One of the first records I bought there was Seek Bromance by Tim Berklick, which is basically Avicii, like under his like first project.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I hear a lot of stories that people kind of start with hip hop. And then, I think dance music is more, I think it's more when you're a teenager and you start getting interested in clubbing and festivals and, partying a bit, where that starts to come around. How did you, who introduced you to DJing and producing? How'd that happen? Because you grew up playing music, right?
Yeah, I played the violin as a kid. I started when I was like 6 years old.
Wow.
And then like all the DJing and production, I basically just taught myself in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I started with a couple of friends and one of my brothers. We made like a team.
Nice.
And we would DJ at birthday parties when we were like 15, 16. And
we bought
speakers and everything. And we were like, we're going to set your party up with some music and bigger speakers. And
for sure.
So we did that. And we just like watched tutorials online and just tried stuff. I would like come home from school and just practice mixing and do it nonstop. So I pretty much taught everything myself in the end. But then after finishing high school in Germany, I moved to London for a year to go to a college.
Nice.
Called Point Blank. And I actually studied like sound design and music composition and music business and all of this, like a lot of stuff over there.
So what do you think about, you know, obviously Germany has a rich music history and, you know, has its own sound, and then London is very different. Can you feel the effects now in your music from having lived in London?
For sure, yeah, especially in the beginning, like when I moved there in Germany, everyone was still all about dubstep at that time. It was 2012.
Sure.
And in London, they had kind of moved on to more deep and chill house vibes. So that's how I got into like deep house and chill vibes. And then I kind of combined that with my own taste and my like classical education and kind of started making house tracks with real instruments involved and kind of started to like find my own sound. And it was definitely a lot influenced by the UK house scene then. And actually right now I noticed that I'm more and more leaning towards that again, like Reton and James Hype, MK, Jax Jones, all those are acts that excite me. And like Medusa, for example, they're from Italy, but I feel they have a really UK sound.
Sure.
And everything that's like UK vibey right now, I really love it. And I play it in my sets, and I can see myself getting back to London at some point, actually.
What, so what was the experience of kind of finding your sound? You know, you talk about this sort of evolution of that, and you're putting music out, right? And you're getting, or you're playing and you're getting feedback. Like, was there ever, like you said, you know, dubstep was really popular in Germany at the time, but that's not what you were playing. So were you getting, you know, pushback from people? Like that, you know, that thought you should have been playing dubstep, or was it, did you find people really receptive kind of from the beginning?
A bit of both. Like when I started out, I was playing at student nights and I would play from 10 p.m. till 5 a.m. So I had to keep the crowd happy and, and play a bit of everything. And so I was kind of open for all genres, and I kind of knew what was going on in all worlds a little bit.
Yeah.
But then I think it was the development from being like a resident party DJ to actually being an artist with his own vibe and sound.
Yeah.
And that happened through production, like just me in the studio making what I like and what I enjoy doing. And then from time to time, people would know the tracks that I was putting out. So they kind of knew what to expect at my shows as well.
Yeah.
And they started buying tickets to see me. And then I think that's where the difference happens. You know, I'm not longer a party DJ that needs to read the crowd. What do I have to play tonight to make people dance? I'm like, they're here to dance. They're here to hear what I want to play. So it changed everything, having my own productions.
So was there a moment when you realized that this was your career and this was kind of, that it was sort of starting to work?
There were several, like when I was living in London, still I was just 18 years old and I managed to get opening slots at Ministry of Sound in Pasha in London. And back then, like I was selling tickets to get the slot. So I was like a student and I sent out like mixtapes. Right. I still made CDs. I was walking through London and just handing everybody my CD, emailing like 200 promoters a day. And they like one time they replied, they were like, oh, we like your mix. It actually sounds cool. Can you sell 50 tickets at your college?
Wow.
And you can have the opening slot. I was like, I'll do it.
Sure.
So I took the 50 tickets and I forced all my friends to come. and it worked out in the end. They booked me again.
Yeah.
So it was cool.
That's cool.
You know, that was the early days. And then I think like on a bigger scale, in 2014, I signed a publishing deal. And the advance was big enough for me to live off it for quite a while. So I was like, okay, now it's actually a profession. I can make money with this. And, you know, I can fully focus on music and just keep doing what I love.
Nice. What is it about, I mean, I love that story that, you know, it's a hustle, right? You're getting,
definitely,
you know, you're getting parties at school, you're selling tickets, like you're kind of an entrepreneur as much as you're a musician at that point, right?
For sure, yeah.
What is it from those days that you still use today?
I think it's the drive and the commitment. It's like I had a vision, you know, I knew I wanted to be a big DJ. I could picture myself standing on big stages playing my songs. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to try and just do my best and work hard every day and just go for it. And I think it's really important to have that vision to know where you want to go, what you want to do, and then just do it, because the rest is just learning by doing anyway. And every situation, every day is different. But as long as you know what you're doing it for and what you want, I think that's something I try to remind myself a lot. And actually, just recently, I started to work with a young DJ who's now 19 years old himself.
Oh, cool.
And I'm kind of like mentoring him and helping him out with his music and stuff. And like, he has that fresh energy I used to have when I was 18, 19. And it's now reminding me of those days. And it's like, it's nice to keep that close to me. You know, you have to have that young energy and remind myself that there was a day where I was like blown away by 50 new Facebook likes, you know, and I was like, wow, so many people discovered me today.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's like, just never forget where I'm coming from, I guess.
I mean, I think it's so important to be able to recapture that, right? Because the bar keeps moving.
Definitely,
right?
And
so when you get 50 new Facebook likes, it, you know, that doesn't mean anything. So, you know, it's that harder to find those things that are really meaningful.
So. It's gotten easier for me again now, but there definitely was a time where I was like kind of used to the success. And also, like, I started with my two biggest hits right away. Like, Cheerleader Remix was my first like chart success ever. And it went number one in 55 countries. And I don't know if I can ever repeat that again. You know, that's like, that's history. I'm not sure if I can do that again.
Right.
But of course, like, on like some level, I was kind of expecting every song to go like that. So
yeah,
it was really hard to also be happy with a top 100 record, you know, which is still amazing. Or like a top 10, I was like, yeah, but it didn't go number one. But yeah, of course not. Not everybody, like, not every song goes number one all the time. But this was like, I guess, in the first 2 years after Cheerleader, where I was like, kind of, I didn't even know what was happening. And I was like in this crazy world just following.
Yeah.
And now I'm kind of in a state of mind where I'm like grateful for everything, you know? So like, even one person listening to my song right now somewhere around the world means so much to me. So it's like, I try to, you know, just be grateful for everything.
So how does that happen? I mean, first of all, take me back to the moment when Cheerleader's blowing up, and you know, as you said, you're still new in your career. I'm sure you weren't expecting that to happen.
No.
so like, what's going through your mind, and what do you do, you know, the next day? Like, how do things change for you?
It's been crazy. Like, I was actually in Berlin with my manager on the way to a meeting to sign that publishing deal I told you about.
Yeah.
And on our way to the meeting, we got a call. It's like, yo, you're top 10 on the Swedish single charts. I'm like, which song? It's like, oh, that Cheerleader remix you did like half a year ago. I was like, really? That's crazy. Like, because it was out for so long already and nothing happened. And I was just like, wait, that song is now growing? And I didn't even know what it means to have a hit back then. You know, it was in Sweden. It was so far away from me because I haven't been that I didn't really understand it. I think the first time I really understood that, like, this song was blowing was when I went to Sweden like 3 months later for a little tour. And I saw people like at the show singing along to the song. And like, when I played the song, suddenly everybody was coming inside, like all the smokers that were outside were like, oh, the song is finally playing.
Oh, that's cool.
I was like, wait, they actually know the song. It's like, that's what a hit is. You know? I can tell they like it.
Amazing.
So I kind of had to see with my own eyes and go to a place where it actually was a hit, because in my home Germany, it became a hit like 4 months later or something like that. So first I had to go to Sweden to understand.
Wow. And you know, you kind of talked about it, but I imagine it's really hard when then all of a sudden you have this expectation, right? And you go, mm-hmm. I mean, I want to talk through the journey because I think it's a really interesting thing that musicians go through, from you doing it with your friends as a hobby, as a social thing. Maybe there's a little money involved. You start to have this vision, but it's still really far away. And then all of a sudden, mm-hmm. now you're a professional musician and then a successful one and all of that. And I think, I think it's interesting to understand how that affects your creativity, right? Mm-hmm. And what it's like, you know, what it's like walking into the studio, you know, after that type of success versus what it was like when you just were messing around. And how do you sort of, are you ever able to get back to just messing around?
I did now, finally. Yeah. Like, that's a great question, because now I've been at home for 7 weeks because of the shutdown, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think I did a tweet the other day actually saying, like, I feel like it's 2014 again before I started traveling the world with my music, because I'm like at home every day. I have a home studio. And of course, now I do more press. I do more interviews. I have my social media going and everything. But
yeah.
I have so much time right now, just simply because I don't travel, that I'm in the studio again, like watching tutorials, learning new things, messing around. I actually just made a remix for my own single, Sicko, because like I had time. I was like, let me just try to give it a new spin. And I brought the marimba back, which was like my signature sound in 2014-15. I used it a lot. Mm. And then I didn't want to use it anymore because I was like, nah, I kind of want to develop and move on with my sound. And now I'm like, I'm feeling 2014 vibes again. So I'm bringing it back. Yeah. So like, I just had that time now, like in the first years, and especially while touring, it's kind of hard to be creative for me because it's a completely different mindset. Like, I'm worried about the flights, or if the show goes well. Like, I'm always nervous and not really in a free creative flow. So what I did is like take out 2-3 weeks for studio time and say like, okay, like for 2 weeks I won't be available, kind of like a vacation of like being an artist in like marketing sense, and then just be in the studio for two weeks, don't take any calls. I do like writing camps. I meet up with singer and songwriters to write the songs. And,
nice.
I have like my little islands in my calendar where I can go to and just be creative.
Yeah, that's big.
Yeah.
And so last year you went to a Buddhist monastery. Is that right?
Yeah, it was this year actually in January.
Oh, okay.
For 2 weeks. So it's pretty recent. And it was cool. I really, really liked it. And basically, we've been meditating all day. Yeah. There were also some Dharma talks about the Buddhist teaching and some communal meals, of course, and stuff like that. But most of it was like meditating and what they call watering the good seeds. So it's about focusing on the good. It's a lot of it has to do with gratitude for the little things. Like, I would sometimes just sit outside for an hour and be grateful for the sun, like warming us all, or stuff like that, you know, amazing. Like really basic nature things, and just feel that like pure happiness doing that.
So,
and it kind of changed everything in a way. Yeah.
Yeah, I bet. I'm interested to know more about that. But what led you to that? I've read a bit about you, and you've talked about, you know, mental health challenges. You know, we're talking about the expectations that you put on yourself, or that that you feel from the outside world. So tell me a little bit about kind of what that was like, and kind of what led you to go to a monastery and take that time for yourself.
So like throughout the past 3-4 years, there were many moments where I didn't feel well, just mentally.
Yeah.
Like, I had a lot of anxiety. I had times with a lot of panic attacks, like So sometimes I wouldn't even leave my home anymore. Like I wouldn't even go to the supermarket because I was afraid that it might happen again.
Yeah.
So I was like, wait, here's like me, 22 years old, you know, I'm successful. Everybody loves me. I made enough money. I have a beautiful home, but I'm still not happy. Like, what's wrong with me, you know? Yeah. And I started to ask a lot of questions and just try to find answers and meditating and just kind of looking inside and getting to know myself better. I also like mentally traveled a lot through my childhood. I did hypnotherapy, which was quite fun. So cool. It's like basically like a mental coach that works with hypnosis. And I did a lot just to get to know myself better and what's triggering me and understand my emotions and kind of deal with everything that happened. And that just led me to be free and happy and
nice.
That's it. Just free and happy.
Yeah. And were you kind of figuring that out on your own, or do you did you have somebody to kind of help you through that?
I started like 4 years ago with an app called Headspace. It was the first one that I tried. It's like Love explaining Headspace. The basics of meditation quite well. So especially if you're a beginner and you want to get into it, I think it's really cool. And now I also have Calm, and I use the Plum Village app a lot. That's the monastery I went to. They offer one too, which is dope.
Oh, cool.
And then I had a mental coach for 2 years as well that helped me like just by talking to me and giving advice and leading me like through the process. And then I found that monastery, I guess, which was like the final key to my spiritual journey, because it was just like really intense, you know, just for 2 weeks with like, wow. I didn't have my phone on for 2 weeks. Like I was completely offline, only with the people there. And you talk a lot also with the other people that are coming to the monastery, and it's just a really like healing community. So that's been fun. I loved it.
That's great. How is it different now going into the studio? Kind of having been through
now
that experience.
I kind of like, especially now, like having made like my private journey, it made it a lot easier when writing the songs, because even though I'm DJ producer and I don't sing myself, I started for this project to also co-write all the lyrics, because I was like a lot looking for purpose as well on my journey. Cool. And I was like, I want to use my music to speak to people and entertain. Of course, I'm a DJ. I want everybody to have a good time, but also to put in some like lyrical depth that I think is important.
Nice.
So that's been finally possible now, because before I was a bit scared even of going into writing sessions and sharing my thoughts and my feelings with strangers and putting it into a song. You know, it's quite rare sometimes that you find like a room of people with like 3-4 people you never met them before, but you talk about your like inner emotions and trying to put it into a song. So it can be really nice, but when you're insecure and anxious, it's not a nice place to be in.
No, of course.
You know, so it opened up the doors to songwriting for me a lot.
That's great.
Now I also try to focus less on, okay, I have to make another hit or something. I'm just like, I just have to do what I want to do, you know? I'm just in the studio and I'm trying to make something that I like and that I feel. And like before, if I feel it, hopefully a lot of other people will feel it too.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. There's a quote that I read of yours that I really liked that said, "You only have a chance if you fight for your dreams." And so I wonder, what does that fight look like for you? Have you always known that, or were there times when you'd kind of wish that you had fought or that you had fought differently?
Oh, that's a very big question. Well, where do I start?
Well, like, I guess, what does it look like now to fight for your dreams?
Like, yeah, first I think we have to define the word fight in a way, because fight is usually a quite aggressive thing that involves a lot of cruelty. And I feel like I probably I mean, the word still works, but I think you got to be careful with it a little bit that people understand it right.
Yeah.
Because it's not like when fighting for my dream, it's not like I'm fighting anybody else. The only person I might be fighting is myself. And the way I'm slowing myself down and stopping myself with like doubts, for example. So I think it's really about having a vision and committing to it. And then just going for it, even if it might not be easy at all times, you know, just like stick to the plan.
Yeah.
As long as I know like what I'm in for and what my goal is, I have a long-term plan. Just keep doing it. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot, of course, with like expectations from family, from your like social surroundings and stuff. Because of course there were times as well where people like said, come on, this is not a real job. You're just doing music. When are you going to go to uni? When are you going to learn something proper, you know? So it's also like believing in yourself, no matter like what people say around you. I think that's another really important thing when fighting for your dreams. And then one thing where maybe I like sometimes I wish I had fought for myself harder, faster, like earlier, is my sexuality. I came out as bisexual publicly in 2018, but I was already like famous by then for 3 years that I kept it a secret.
Wow.
And it wasn't really easy at all times because I would go into interviews, people asking me about my relationships and stuff, and I couldn't really tell the whole story.
Sure.
And therefore I was just like making myself suffer, you know, because there was no reason for keeping it a secret other than me being insecure, and by being insecure but being put on the spot like that all the time, I kind of made myself suffer more. But on the other hand, you know, I don't want to blame my old me, you know, I just needed time, and I came around eventually, so it's all good now.
I mean, you know, that's never easy. You know, I have friends who have come out, and it's, I think, especially not easy when you're famous. What surprised you about people's reactions?
That it wasn't an issue at all. Like, at least like for me, being like living in Germany and having the surrounding that I had, like everybody was so supportive and positive, and it didn't even seem to be a big issue. And I was just making it one myself in my head, like for years and years and years growing up. But then when I told my family, when I told my friends, and also when I told the public, like the response was like, I'd say 99 out of 100 comments were positive.
Yeah.
So it was amazing. I was actually really happy to see that there's a lot of people just being open and acceptive already.
Sure. Yeah, and that's why I brought up the quote about fighting, because, you know, I think it really shows the first fight is always inside of us.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
You know, most people are much easier on us than we are on ourselves. And I love, you know, what you said, that there are different, you know, on some level everything's a fight, but that doesn't have to be cruel.
Right? Yeah,
there's that fight to get out of your own way, right, and to kind of let you be yourself. Whether that's your creative expression, your sexuality, it doesn't matter. Like, we all have those things. You know, every single one of us has something that we're afraid to confront, or afraid to share with other people, or afraid to be judged on. And I think, you know, you bring up like, putting music out and being judged on that is scary on some levels, but you push yourself and you do it. And I think we can all learn from that in different ways in our own lives.
100%. Yeah.
If you're enjoying this one, as you heard Felix say, he was living in London, influenced by the dubstep scene out there. I have an early interview with Caspa and Rusko, who are two of the leaders in that scene coming out of London. Great interview on right as they were reuniting. I think they might have broken up again, or maybe they just got back together for one tour. But they talk about their partnership and kind of the history of dubstep and how all that came about. So after you finish up here, go back and listen to that one. Shift gears. I know you're also a Mercedes ambassador. And I'm good friends with a lot of the Mercedes folks. I worked with Linkin Park a few years ago to do their ambassador deal as well. So I'm pretty familiar with the, you know, what the brand is all about. But I'm curious, you know, what drew you to them, and how do you think about brand partnerships? What do you look for? What made you, you know, what makes you decide to say yes to something, and what do you want out of those relationships?
I don't do a lot of them, because if I do them, I want them to be long-term. I think that's one of the most important things to me, that it's not just a brand paying me money to do one campaign and posting it on my channels and then ciao, you know? For me, it's important that it's like a long-term partnership. I've been with Mercedes for 4 years now, and we've been doing all kinds of stuff together. What I also like about them is that they obviously have a huge network of people from like all fields. They do like brand ambassador days sometimes. Mm-hmm. And for example, I met David Garrett McNamara, who's like one of the best like big wave surfers in the world.
Oh,
and
cool.
It's like you meet so many interesting people through them, and they shape like this community of people that like all have like a passion for something, you know? And I think that's really cool. And then of course, like, I was also inclined to work with them because it's a German brand. I think it's kind
of
cool.
Of course. That
there's like somebody else, like in the car world, we're like one of the biggest manufacturers, obviously. So it's like from Germany to the world.
Sure.
So it felt like it's a great fit with my brand as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then currently I'm working with them for the EQC, which is their first ever like fully electric Mercedes-Benz car.
Oh, nice.
And I'm just kind of hoping that they will shape the future as well and move like mobility to the next level.
Yeah.
And at the moment, at least, I don't think the technology is perfect yet, mm-hmm. but I think like the electric cars seems to be like the way to go right now.
Absolutely. No, I love that. I mean, first, I love, you know, what you said, that, you know, I think brands should be focused on building community, and, you know, mm-hmm. and music is so, you know, music universally brings people together, right? And that's where I think brands fit in, and that's why it's beneficial to Mercedes-Benz to work with you, right? Mm-hmm. Is because of that. And I think a lot of times, as you said, you know, brands, they miss that, right? They see a DJ or an artist as a media channel, and we're going to get some Instagram shots out of it, and I think that's a complete waste.
For sure.
Yeah. I also think, you know, this year is really interesting when there's no touring at the moment. You know, I think it's I don't know what the word is in Germany out here. It looks, you know, doubtful that they'll be touring at all this year, potentially.
Yeah, same here.
At least we don't know. And so, I think you know, the conversation around music is shifting to, well, you know, what else should we be doing? It sounds like you're making use of the time being creative at home.
I'm just trying like to be in the studio as much as possible. And I'm also doing weekly live streams on my Instagram channel.
Cool.
Playing DJ sets for my fans at home.
Nice.
Which is kind of cool. Like, it's giving me, like, it's making it feel more normal for me, because I have like a show day.
Yeah.
You know, I can actually put on some nice clothes and get ready and perform for the fans. And then afterwards I talk with them on live, and I'm like, oh, this like actually feels like a show now.
Yeah. Do you like the sort of that at-home interaction with fans?
Yeah, I really like it. Like, it's obviously not the same as playing a concert and meeting them in real life, but I think it's amazing. And I'm also really proud of all the artists like taking their time to do that, because there's so many people live now all the time on Instagram, keeping everybody entertained and connected, that I think like it's amazing. It's it's what we can do now. You know, I was thinking, like, what can I as an artist do in this time? And obviously I can try to use my range and money to support charity, and everybody who can should do that. But in the meantime, like, I'm an artist, I do music, so yeah. I feel like I need to share the music and I need to share the vibes. Usually people are going to the clubs on the weekends.
Right.
They can't do that now, so let's bring the music home, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And let's play some sets for people at home to enjoy.
Yeah.
So I think that's really cool that so many people are doing that right now.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I think it's you know, these are times when we need music more than ever, and we need mm-hmm. the connection with other human beings more than ever. And so, you know, I love seeing artists. You know, I think it's good for them and it's good for their fans.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What? So I know you have the Sicko, your remix coming up.
Mm-hmm.
What else are you working on, and what's exciting to you right now?
I'm finishing up my second studio album. The songs are all written, and I already know, like, which songs gonna end up on the album.
Yeah.
And now I just need to tweak some productions. I actually was kind of interesting because I already had the album done pretty much like end of last year song wise.
Mm-hmm.
I had like a concept ready, and I went on my vacation. I was like, okay, when I come back, I'm just gonna finish it up, and then we're ready to go.
Nice.
But then, like, I had this 8 weeks break, and I went to the monastery, and everything kind of changed for me.
Yeah.
So I was in LA in February for 2 weeks, and I wrote a couple of more songs because I now included some happy songs on the album too.
Nice.
There's some songs that are now like about enjoying the moment and like living freely and happy in the now, and all of that.
Yeah.
So the album that was already done actually made a really interesting turn this year. And now I need to piece it back together and kind of incorporate the new songs into the album.
Nice. So what's your routine like? How are you incorporating some of the experiences from the monastery or the hypnotherapy? Like, do those become, is that like a one-time thing and you sort of leave it behind you, or do those become part of everyday life?
The meditation became a part of everyday life.
Yeah.
And also I think some of the basic like core principles of the teachings, like I try to let go a lot. I try to not have expectations and preferences and all of that, and just be like, just go with the flow and understand that I can never control what's going to happen around me.
Sure.
There's always going to be ups and downs. I can only control how I feel in those situations.
Mm.
And I just try to like maintain being mindful and happy in every moment. And that's kind of like keeping me busy already, because I notice, of course, when I'm working more again, when I'm more on social media, like I get distracted easily because sure. there's so much input right. coming at me all the time. So I always try to monitor myself.
Yeah.
And when I notice like that my mind is running off again, I bring myself back. I immediately do some to like take some deep breaths, do a little exercise. And that's like, I kind of forgot what the question was initially.
No, that's
but
great.
That's
no,
kind of how I included it into my everyday life.
Exactly.
I think that was it, right?
Yeah. That's great. Well, I know it's getting late out there, and I want to be respectful of your nighttime.
All good, man. I love it.
Cool. Well, I want to do a quick lightning round before I let you go. So what's your favorite city to travel to?
If I only can choose one right now, it would be LA.
Okay. Nice. Who's your favorite DJ?
Skill-wise, on the decks, it's James Hype right now, for sure. He's killing it. Like, if you didn't see him DJ yet, check it out on YouTube. It's crazy. He's, like, on four decks all the time.
Wow.
Throwing in acapellas, mixing super fast, and he's doing that for 2 hours nonstop.
Nice.
So it's crazy.
Very cool. What's the last great book you read?
The last great book I read, I actually have it right here. It's by Thich Nhat Hanh.
Oh, yeah.
Innerer Friede, äußerer Friede. That's the German version. So it's like inner peace, outer peace. Basically, it says if you're peaceful inside, you're going to like live a peaceful life on the outside as well.
Awesome. Love it. If you could wake up tomorrow having gained any one quality or ability, what would it be?
Flying.
Yeah.
I think flying would be dope.
That'd be cool.
I love the birds, you know, they're just, I don't know, no boundaries.
Amazing. And last one, if I worked for you, what's something I would hear you say over and over?
It's not perfect yet.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, man. I really appreciate it. This is fun.
Yeah, I loved it, man. Thank you so much.
How should everybody find you online?
At Felix Ehn on all channels. It's Felix, J-A-E-H-N.
Awesome. And yeah, good stuff, man. I hope to meet you one day in LA when you come out here. And really appreciate you making time. Awesome. Hey, that was Felix Ehn on Rebel Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. Make sure you hit us on Twitter or Facebook with a comment. You can find us at Rebel Radio Net. You can always leave a review on iTunes if you want. We might read it. We probably won't. But go ahead and express yourself. Why not? Most importantly, come back next week for more Rebel Radio. Peace.